Is I had a tremendous debate with myself what to teach today. Not that there's a lack. The fact of the matter is that Mitzvah Aseh Shehazman Gedolah is one of the most fascinating subjects in halacha. And we really could go on for a while, but after a while it's tedious. I mean, we've done the same thing over and over again. What I would like to do is one last topic. And if we have any other topics, we'll come back to it. Let me just go over as an introduction, just quickly, what we've discussed in the last couple of shiurim. We know that women are obligated in all, like men, in all positive commandments, which are not time determined, and all thou shalt nots. When it comes to a positive commandment which is time determined, women are free. We saw there was a machlokus between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi, whether women could indeed perform them. And the halacha is, like Rabbi Yossi, that women can do all mitzvot. Based on the consideration of mitzvot aseh shehazman gedolah, that women can, in fact, do all positive commandments which are time determined. The next question that came up was whether they can make brachot. And we saw that, that according to the Yash, because the major problem is it's a bracha shenetzricha. You're not obligated in that bracha. You can maybe do the mitzvah, but you're not obligated in the bracha. And it's an unnecessary bracha. The second consideration is that you're saying v'tzivanu, which suggests that you're obligated and you're not obligated. Besides, you may be lying. I mean, what do you say v'tzivanu? So, we saw that amongst the Ashkenazic poskim, the consensus was that women can indeed say v'tzivanu. The bracha is not unnecessary because there is a link, there is a connection to the mitzvah, either because they're in God's army, which means they're just like men, or because they get reward, so it shows that they have a connection to the mitzvah. And as far as the word vitzivano is concerned, either vitzivano means, again, you're in God's army, so vitzivano is relevant, or, and if you're in the volunteer idea, then it refers to Klal Yisrael, it doesn't refer to you particularly. Or it can mean, vitzivano means we have a connectedness to the mitzvah. But there's a way of understanding the word vitzivano, not necessarily meaning obligated. And amongst the Svardi camp, we saw that there were really two schools amongst the Svardi. We saw that there were people like Rav Avadia Yosef, the Shulchan Aruch, Rav Avadia Yosef, who strongly, adamantly insisted that it was forbidden for Svardi women to make brachot. On the other hand, we saw amongst some other Svardi poskim, like Rav Uziel, and we saw the Chidah, who said, no, it's perfectly all right for Svardi women to make mitzvot, and it's a good idea, educationally and spiritually, that they could be encouraged, and there's some precedent for it, there's some custom, such and such. So, as far as the Svardi camp is concerned, there's a split. I must say that Avadia Yosef seems to be taking over more and more as a sway, simply because of his sway in the Sephardic community. From the educational institutions that Shas set up, and based on just his preeminent scholarship, he is adamant that it's a bracha lebatala, has begun to take a sway. All right. We also mentioned in passing, and I just want to reiterate this point because it's relevant, that since women are not obligated in positive commandments which are time determined, since they're not commanded, there is no concept of arevut, of responsibility. We talked about this concept that kol yehudim zoros, that all Jews are responsible, they can help other Jews fulfill their mitzvot. If it's provided it's a mitzvah that's verbal, I mean, if it's a mitzvah that's verbal, I can do the mitzvah for you. If it's a mitzvah shebagufa, for instance, I can't drink abrikosim for you, I can't put on tefillin for you, I can't, that's mitzvah that's on your body. But if it's a mitzvah that's verbal, one Jew can help another Jew. And therefore, men can make women for kiddush even though they've done so. Similarly, women can make kiddush for men, because men and women are obligated in Kiddush equally. We mentioned why, even though it's a positive commandment, which is time determined. We'll come back to this when we come back to Shabbos formally. But we saw it because Shomer and Zachor, they're interchangeably, and therefore women are obligated in all Shabbos commandments. So, But in those things in which women are not obligated, there is no arivut. There is the woman can't do it for a man, and a man can't do it for a woman. Okay? Now, the mitzvah fixed by shofar is to hear shofar blow. So a man can blow shofar because the mitzvah is to hear the shofar blow. But the man can't make the bracha for the woman if he's already made the bracha for himself already. He has no arivut for it. He can't help her, so she has to make the bracha herself. Okay. Yes, she can blow shofar. Yes, no question. Now, although there are, I should say, there are poskim that would seem to suggest that it's preferable that a man blow, but the consensus is not that way. The sense is if you can, she can do it, she can do it. And there's no problem. She makes the bracha, and she blows shofar. Okay, now, I'd like to deal with one last issue. There are other issues, but there will be one last issue, which is on page 48. And we mentioned this in passing. A fact about Yeshiva ago, Mrs. Hershkowitz raised this particular issue. I'd like to see it inside. We're going to do it quickly. Again, yeah, because I don't want to belabor the point. But there's a very interesting twist here, which I'd like to discuss. The question I want to deal with is, can women obligate themselves? I don't mean to say, can a woman do a mitzvah, can a woman make a bracha? I don't mean that. I mean, can a woman say, from now on, I want to be obligated. I'm mechuyevet. I accept upon myself all mitzvot asay shazman grama, and now I'm obligated. And we're going to see, the answer is, yes, she can do it. But now we have to see what the consequences are in a second. Okay? The answer is yes, a woman can make herself obligated in all positive commandments which are time determined. Let's see it inside. Page 48. Okay? Now we're dealing with it's 7 Yud Zayin. And this deals with Svirata Omer, the counting of the Omer. The Rambam says, Svirata Omer, it's not to say, I'll call Ish Nisrael, all males in Israel, and Hashim Vavadim, to be me, man, but women are free from it. Because of the positive man, which is time determined. Interesting, there's a Ramban which seems to suggest otherwise. There's a question of the Ramban, the Girsa of the Torah. I don't want to go, there's a lot of discussion about the Ramban that seems to say otherwise. Maybe we have to do the old Shmuel, Sveradam, and we'll discuss it. Birkei Yosef, and the Chida, Aramaic of the Chida is one of the leading. He was a very, very, Chaim David Azulai, he was a very, very prolific writer, said as follows. Ilu al nashim has shesofot. Now those who criticize women for counting. V'lina da shimnozo, v'lula, v'chiyotzebo, Rabbi Lutam. If they hold like Rabbi Lutam that you can make bracha on all parts of commandments, why should Svirat Omer be any different? Gam v'svira yin hagu ki uchayim. Even on Svirah too, they should act as they normally do. Now, why did some people object? Did they know about the Rabbeinu Tam? Yes, they did know about the Rabbeinu Tam. But remember, Svirah is in many cases, according to many authorities, is you have to do 50 days. To fulfill the mitzvah, it's not just doing each day of the mitzvah, but the whole 50 days. And some authorities even maintain if you miss one of the days, it now becomes a bracha. Everything retros was bracha levatala. So they said the men who are obligated to count Svira, they should do it. And when you were, they may not work out. They may not say, all right, happen. But the women are not obligated. Why should they get themselves in this problem of a bracha levatala? Other authorities say no. Every day is a mitzvah. And there's a mitzvah to count by weeks still, but what you did counts for what you did. You didn't do the whole mitzvah, you didn't do the whole mitzvah. Anyway, but you see that the Chida wasn't bothered by this. The Chida says, if you count, whatever you count is good, and the women make bracha on all mitzvah, that say shazman gomad, they can do it in the Svirat Omer as well. The Magen Avraham. Watch the Magen Avraham. Magen Avraham, who was, again, one of the pillars of Pesach. When you have the Shulchan Aruch it has two major commentaries on the side. In each of the four volumes of the Shulchan Aruch, the four major divisions. When Aruch Chaim, the laws of the holidays and everyday laws, the two major commentaries are the Magen Avraham and the Turi Zahav. They are the side, they are the major commentaries. The Magen Avraham was a major, major pillar. And what does he write? Nashim Tuvot, women are free from Sefirat HaOmer. No big surprise. Umiyu, Falshavya Alayu, Chova. Women have accepted upon themselves as an obligation. At least in the time of the Magen Avraham, womankind were counting. Now notice he doesn't say that counting. He says what? They've accepted upon themselves an obligation. Very interesting. I mean, that's not just they want to count and they count, but there's something about the fact that they do this, the womankind now have accepted a custom to count that makes it obligatory. Okay? So now what is it in halacha? Now look at note 66 at the bottom in Rabbi Elman's commentary. For kiblu hanashim with the mitzvah latzman kichova, ulemedim anu mi mitzvah zah. Learn from this particular command, this law, al klal mitzvot aseh shazman gamal, all the mitzvot aseh shazman gamal, the fi dat Magen Avraham, according to the view of the Magen Avraham, imamnam nahu nagu nashim the kaiman chayavot. Hein lamshich b'kiyumam mitam neder l'dvar mitzvah, an oath to do a mitzvah, an oath to do a worthwhile action. Ve'ein lahafsik l'lo hatarat nedarim, and they can't stop without being mater neder, without abrogating the oath. There is a procedure by which you come to the court and say, look, I did this, and I, or in a normal case, I took upon my oath as of an oath, and you know, I didn't realize I wouldn't be able to do it. Just too hard for me. When I took this oath, I didn't realize. And the court weighs and sees if you're sincere and you really mean it, and the court can say, yes, we abrogate the oath. Okay? And in general, a person, the rule generally is that a person who does a worthwhile action three times and doesn't say bulim neder, they is considered as accepting upon themselves an oath. And that's why there's a procedure called Hatarat Nedarim. Men are very careful about this. An Erev Rosh Hashanah, in which men make a general statement, I've done all sorts of things, I don't remember what I did three times, I don't remember what I said, Bulim Neder, please do me a favor and abrogate these laws so that I don't violate the prohibition of not keeping your oath.
You have to say Bulim Neder out loud,
is
there enough to have it in mind?
I mean, it's enough. Is your intention? No.
It's just depending on her intention.
Her intention, right. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now, but there's something more than this. You have to understand. The language of the Magen Avraham doesn't talk about individual women. The Magen Avraham is talking about women have the custom. Now, this particular point is a very fine point. Can women accept upon themselves and obligate all other women? Now, if you have a community in which women have not started coming to your shelter, can they now obligate other women born into that community? A woman turns 12. Is she now obligated? Not because she kept it three times, but because womankind have kept it. The classic example is Kiyat Shofar. Women are very careful about Kiyat Shofar. You know, even if they have little children, oh, they bring the little children that come to make sure a man comes and they'll shepherd for them. The Magen Avraham seems to suggest that yes, there is such a concept that women can indeed make something obligatory. Very fascinating. The Minchat Chinuch is Minchat Chinuch says the Magen Avraham cut out. The women now made it obligatory. That womankind can go ahead and make something an obligation which the Torah freed them from. The Nashim and Kiblu Alayin Asot Mitzvah to say Shem Tuvot Mimeni Yitchayvu Mibnei the Shavya Lechova. Now it's not very clear, and a lot of the poskim afterwards don't make this distinction, but I think what's following the Minchat Chinuch is not the right of an individual woman to go ahead and say, I want to make an obligation. There's such a concept of neder mitzvah, right? A woman can say, I want to keep shofar. It's a neder. It's an oath. You can make oaths to do things you're not obligated to do. The problem is, how does a woman go ahead and make an oath as a community of women, and I get all other women. I mean, that's what happens. Your 12-year-old daughters are now obligated to hear shofar because you, as mothers, have all accepted upon to do it. It's like a communal minhag. It's not. Says, how can you do such a thing? Right? I've never seen such a thing in my life. Yesh deot shasu lehem lasot mitzvah aseh shezman zama. He says that, look, there are people, they are the Rishonim, who, and we saw from the Tanaim, but even Rishonim who say, if a woman says a bracha, it's aser. Okay? So there are Rishonim already who say it's aser for them to do it. Right? Call everybody, it's not an obligation. So how do I make it an obligation? Well, most of the authorities don't understand the chinuch. What do you mean? How can they do it? There's such a thing as minhag. What's the power of minhag? In general, what's the power of minhag? Why am I obligated minhag? Because it's a good thing. I'm obligated minhag because we as Jews feel this is a proper thing, it's a worthwhile thing. We've accepted a neder. The whole power of minhag, any minhag, is neder. If a person has a minhag not to eat kitniot, right? And for whatever the reason is, wants to start eating kitniot. Now we'll talk about a woman who marries, whether she has to do it. But for whatever the reason is, you didn't eat shemen kitniot. Or whatever the reason is, all these chumras. And now you say, I didn't realize I can't, there's no food I can get. People who first came to this, Israel back in the early 70s, and they were very careful about shemen, and all the shemen kitniot, and all they come to Israel, can't get it. And they wanted to start, they didn't want to have to worry about shemen kitniot. Okay? Well, it is to abrogate it, the issue involved, whether you have to do it or not, but the issue involved is neder. So why can't womankind accept the minhag? They've established the minhag. Why? Because of women? What is the difference if a woman does it or a man does it? Because they're not obligated? It's a worthwhile thing. They get mitzvah points for it. Why can't they get it? Why can't they make it better? So most authorities don't understand the minhag. However, there are those who are in the minhag's camp for other reasons. They say, look, okay, we don't, the Minchas Chinuch says they're not obligated. How can they? That doesn't bother me. But what does bother me is, how does the whole reason why the Torah freed women, according to the Rav Yoh, was why? So that she would have the flexibility to respond to family needs. How can she now go ahead and take upon herself an obligation which may conflict with her family needs? That's the problem. So how can she take an oath upon herself? That's exactly why the Torah freed her, so now she's going to have to do it and abrogate what the Torah said?
You're talking about the case of an individual?
Even an individual, certainly a community, but even the individual woman, how does she take an oath upon herself to do exactly what the Torah told her? They wanted to be flexible. What? Okay, then comes the problem of low plug. I understand what you're saying. But the fundamental problem of a community or married a woman who does have family obligations, how does she go ahead and do such a thing? What? I agree. The question, how did that first start? That's essentially what the question is. So there are those who some say that there is no such thing. That a woman can take all sorts of minhagim and nice things, but things that abrogate, that go run against the Torah's specific desire, the way the Rishonim understand, the specific desire to leave her flexible, she can do. It would seem. However, it's very clear, however, that the Magen Avraham didn't hold that way. And that the Magen Avraham felt that the woman is mature enough to accept upon herself the obligation. And as far as her family responsibilities are concerned, let's leave it up to her to make sure she can dance between the drops. But that's her decision. Right? And we'll see, Rabbi Akiva Eger says the same thing. And there are many, many good consensus poskim are that women can do that. It's up to them. Let's look at the Rabbi Akiva Eger. Rob Nashim Didan Machmirot. Okay, we're top of 49. Rob Nashim Didan Machmirot. That's man, Uzirot, Uzvizot, Nekayim. Rob Mitzvot Asay Shazman Grama. Gilom Shofar, Velulav. Vehave Kikibnu Alayu. They could bind themselves. The Ben Ishchai says that if she wants that, if she can't, let's look at the Ben Ishchai quickly. Nashim Tuvot Menadim L'Shmo Shofar. Ach Rob Nashim Kavu Mitzvah Zo Aleu B'Torat Chiyu U'Ba'od B'Bet HaKnesset L'Shmo Kol Shofar. Lechen Isha Shenaga B'Chach Kama Shonim Nasta Alei Chiyu. I just want to bring you just a subtlety of point here. Notice that Ben Ishchai does not seem to talk about the fact of the community. He just said that most women to do it. And then he talks about an individual woman. It's not clear to me, and I don't think, I discussed this at great length with my brother Dove. There's a very important question is, it may be that the Ben Ishchai holds that that the community can't obligate the individual on something that she's absolutely free, but she as an individual can accept it. Now that's a point that most of the person, they dance around it. They don't hit the nail on the head. What is this concept of community minhag versus, excuse me, I just want to make you settle for the language, the nuances here, but I don't want to spend more time. Okay, l'chein ha'isha sh'naga b'chach kama shanim natsa le'chiyuf v'im nemsa sh'lo yechola l'vona b'ta k'neset yevoa toke etzla l'veta b'yidkala. If she can't do it, she should what? She has not only come to her house. The chain nagabotein, that's what we do. That's the general common situation. To the point that people are in hospital or hospitals, they make sure somebody goes to the hospital and pull a shofar for them. Isha shenaga b'mitzvah zo v'nizdamin lo pam achat shelo tuchal avi tokeh levita. What happens if one time she can't have somebody come to her house? And if she doesn't hear shofar, what's going to happen? She will violate her neder. She should go to shul when all the men are doing hatara to darim. She should go ahead and do it too. Al kabbalat minhag, and the fact that she accepted the minhag. Now you must say, no, wait a second. What is that going to help her? She's going to wait till next Rosh Hashanah to violate the answer. What's the answer? What does hatara to darim do? Abrogates the oath retroactively. It means when I accepted the oath in the first place, I didn't realize that I was not going to be able to keep it. I thought I could keep it easily, and I didn't realize these circumstances. I didn't think about my children. I didn't think about getting sick. So I abrogate the oath retroactively, so even though I'm Rosh Hashanah, Rosh Hashanah, I didn't hear Shabbat, but the next Rosh Hashanah I can abrogate retroactively. And that works. Kol Nidre is a big problem because it's done after dark. Kol Nidre really to work has to be done before Shmuel. Courts don't really work after Shmuel. The whole purpose of Kol Nidre has nothing to do with courts. The whole purpose of Kol Nidre is to get you to move you. And it usually does a good job. Right? That's the purpose of Kol Nidre. You're raising a very good point. Whether it works, it's not a trivial situation. If you want to do it right, you go to the court. And I tell you an example. This past year, I started saying Tillim, and then I realized that after a couple of days, I was not saying it every day. I had done it three times every day with the intention of doing it every day, and I realized it didn't work. The day I drove for the carpool, I didn't, because they were saying, don't go in the car. And I thought, so I went to the bed, and I said, look, I accept upon myself this custom, and I didn't say, please abrogate. And they did. And from here on in, I'm going to continue doing it, but believe me, that's it. And for the rest of my life, I can say it without saying, believe me. Okay, but women don't do it. Especially with a minig, which is a communal minig, they don't do it. Okay. So he says they got to do it. The Ben Ishchai, he was one of the leading smartim of the late 1800s, says very clearly, you got to do a third of the darim.
Can you do this in front of three women?
that it can be three relatives. A court by Jewish law. I mean, you're going to have a court of women for monetary matters. If all the discussants, you know, witnesses, everything. And then, for instance, now in the modern courts, you can, because everybody accepts men and women, it's for money matters. Certain ceremonial things like that. we'll eventually get to that too. But I won't duck at that issue. It's not true. It's not a trivial issue.
They can be like your husband and your 13-year-old
kid. And yes. 14-year-old kid.
What happens if they want to
enter
on your ship of
long?
They want to
declare time.
That's
what we're going to do. But according to we saw according to the Kafkani, you have to go to third. Like any other nether, right? Let me give you an example. We have a family Purim. As some of you may be aware, that my father was released, was captured by the Hanafis for 36 hours, and every year we have a Siddur Sheva of the Hodaya, where you pray, Hashem, my father, Allah Hashem, was released, and essentially unharmed, and we said the Yom Torah, and we accepted upon ourselves the Neder. We said we extend, and then there was a discussion, how we did it. Essentially, the sons accept upon themselves as the Torah Chova. He accepted it as an obligation. That's not going to be there. That's a real neder. And so, as long as my father was alive, and the first grandchild was my daughter Michal. She said, "I have accepted upon myself as an obligation until I got married, because I don't know what my husband was." And then other grandchildren decided to accept the Torah Rashut. And then, I mean, we discussed it. We continue doing it now, but only the Torah Rashut. Because when my father passed away, we decided we would continue doing it as an option. But these are serious halakhic considerations. All right.
What you said about Kol Nidre, right?
I'd be happy to give you a share on Kol Nidre, but it's not. Kol Nidre is. Because Kol Nidre, in many ways it's like Hataret Nedarim. In many ways it's like Hataret Nedarim, but it's done at night. In fact, if you look in the halacha, most people watch Kol Nidre done before Shkia. I mean, why do we do Marav before Shkia? People in Talmud, you're supposed to say Kol Nidre before. Because if it's Hataret Nedarim, right? It should be done, it has to be done during the day. The court doesn't sit at night.
They do start early,
but I don't know. I mean, I know the shul calls it for 10 minutes, and then from the time it actually starts after shul. But Kol Nidre is problematic. I don't want to say that it doesn't have any value. Part of the problem that there's a chazan saying Kol Nidre, right? Nobody. How does that Torah Nedarim work? I come to the court and I say, you know, I made this oath, and then you say that? There's a chazan up there singing Kol Nidre. You didn't say a thing. You're right. No, because there's a general rule. As a general rule, you're right. I would suggest, and I mean it very seriously, and it's always bothered me, that Women can go ahead, should go ahead and get 3 men and say, listen, whatever I do, I want it to be the Lee Nedder.
And you do it once.
Once, and I say, I'm going to give a hodah from here on in. Anything I do, Dvar Mitzvah, should be Lee Nedder. And actually, that works for the rest of your life. It should work for the rest of your life. Except people do all sorts of strange things where they remember that they gave this decree and they go ahead and do it anyway. So that's what, but it's not, look, these are complicated issues. I'm sensitizing to the issue. Yes. But you'll see in a second, there's an easier way out.
Should the doctor have been asking about women and sanctifying and actually forgetting or having an interruption, what women do?
I think that if the women did it, they should say, mm-hmm. Should clearly believe neder.
Is it better to do something with neder?
Well, it makes it obligatory.
Right, but is it in any way to get
a
class for
a
moment?
I plead ignorance.
This thing on Tehillim is a little bizarre because I don't see where there's a halacha or a Moshe Messina that we have to say Tehillim.
No,
But you don't need.
Look.
You are essentially saying that which the Minchat Chinuch said. The Minchat Chinuch essentially wants to argue that in order for, and I didn't want to go into the whole argument, but in order for there to be binding, there's got to be some element of obligation. Either there's a view in halacha that holds you obligated, but if everybody holds you, you're free. In fact, there are those there are views that hold that you shouldn't do it. Right? How do you go ahead and obligate yourself? Now, Tehillim is an example of those things which are not clearly not obligated. There's no sought to be obligated. But yes, you should. Most authorities hold that if you do something worthwhile, it becomes a form of a neder. Now, a neder, if you do something three times, it's a form of a neder. The question is, what was your intention when you first attempted upon yourself? And if you didn't have intentions, that's okay.
But if you have intentions,
if I said I take that believe that there, and if I can't do it, it's all right. And if that's what was your intention when you first started, then you're not a
man.
Same thing for women davening. There's an even more difficult thing many posts can hold, and even the Minchas Chinuch would hold, that because of the probably, we'll talk about it. I was hoping to get to it today, but we'll start the discussion at least that women are obligated to daven, so that's much more common. Even the Minchas Chinuch would argue that it's much more common. That's the Yabia Omer. That's what the Yabia Omer says. Ravad Yosef. He'll pull it out. Don't worry. He makes a very, very good point. First of all, you should all know Tshuva of Ravad Yosef. Rabbi Omer is like reading like Encyclopedia Judaica or something. He knows everything about everything. Just breathtaking about Tshuva. Read the Tshuva. Nish'alti b'isha shenaga kama shonim l'shma kol tshofa b'rosh Hashanah. וכן לקיים שמץ ותעשה שהזמן גרמה לכגור לשבת בסוכה ולהתעלו לו ואתה ינוסה. Now she's done all these mitzvot and now she can't do it. She's under duress. אין לה יכולה לבוא לבית הכנסת לשמוע תקיעות ולא אמרה בלין. And she didn't say בלין either. האם צריכה התארה על מה שנאמר? She need to do התארה נדרים or what would she do? Now this is the summary of the last paragraph. That was the first paragraph of the Tshuva. The Tshuva goes on for another 8 pages, and this is one of the last paragraphs. Yesh lahakel b'lo hatara. Should be lenient without hatara nedarim. Mikivan sheyesh kama achronim asovlim, because there are some achronim who hold Torah the Minchat Chinuch, and those who say that women can never obligate themselves in positive commandments, because the Torah orders it to be flexible. Shafilu in yirtzu lebatel minagam negamrei shayot, and a woman can stop a minute anytime she wants to. But those days that hold that women, which means that essentially, because the halacha wanted women to be flexible, and women can't make themselves less flexible. Okay, that's essentially running, according to those posts, that runs counter to what the Torah wants. Then I would say the woman can't do it. You can't not make yourself flexible. You can't make yourself inflexible. But the majority don't say that. Majority of opinions say that. That's one reason. Hagam shehoi lachush v'dat ha-machmir. And even though one should be properly be worried about it, should worry because of the stringent opinion, which seems to be the majority, that women have a right to make themselves obligated. Mikolakom kshish ones l'shana chat. But if there's duress for 1 year, the datum lies on the minhagim. They plan to go back to the minhagim. Just this year, she couldn't do it. Haminhag hakodem l'shanim habaot eina tzricha hatara shakein adat kein nahu. Because that was their understanding, that there might be, because we can assume that women who accepted upon her, they know that, you know, there might be the kid had chickenpox. I couldn't make it to shul. Right? Or somebody was sick. And he proves that somebody too by women, a man who has a custom to fast on his father's yahrzeit, right? Or something like that. And for 1 year, he came down with mana, and the doctor doesn't allow him to fast. Do you have to do a tart in the durum? So he says, no, he doesn't mean to abrogate the thing. He's honest. That's why that 1 year doesn't have to do. So that's by men too. There's, when you take an oath, you understand there might be exceptional circumstances. All right, so that's the exceptional circumstances. That's included in the oath.
Why did that apply to you?
Where? Because I could have done it at work. I could have done it other times. I had free times. I was just too busy. And I saw that I wasn't taking up time. Okay. Very good. So Avadi Yosef was an opinion, but that she can't stop. That is, it. Suppose she doesn't want to hear shofar anymore. She doesn't want to hear shofar anymore. She doesn't feel like it. That she'd have to do a Torah Nedarim. You agree she has to do a Torah Nedarim. Now, what's the interesting twist? Okay, that's the end of the subject.
So yes.
No, he agrees. There's no difference between Ashkenazi and Sephardi. There's no Ashkenazi.
She doesn't have.
No. He says that for one time she doesn't have to do. No. But that's it. That's nowadays the consensus of all poskim. He's not passing here as a Sephardi. Why is this whole subject very fascinating? One of the issues that came up. This is a book edited by Simon Greenberg. Okay. Otherwise, it was Rabbi Simon Greenberg from the conservative movement. This book is called The Ordination of Women as Rabbis. Okay? We will discuss this at some point, women and leadership roles in the Jewish community. But one of the issues that came up in the conservative movement is that in most conservative communities, you know, Balabatim don't know very much. And somebody's got to daven, somebody's got to make brachot, somebody's got to help him with the sukkah, somebody's got to do all these things, right? And, you know, make brachot for people. And, so, if she is the rabbi of this conservative community, and she is not obligated, she can't make the bracha of leishet basukkah, or she can't blow the shofar for them. She can't. There's a lot of things she can't do. Where you need somebody, arevut only works if you're obligated. But if you're not obligated, she as a rabbi can't do all these things. You following the other problem? You are so insane. So lack. Excuse me. Let me make a statement. Okay? Look, there's a problem with the premise. However, you have to understand that while we Orthodox are bound by halacha, the conservatives are guided by halacha. And they, while they take into consideration a variety of social considerations, right, they do struggle a great deal with halachic problems. Now,
leadership.
What?
Leadership.
Not just the leadership. I really. I think you have to understand that in every community, Orthodox included, Balabatim fall in all sorts of shades of black to white. And a lot of Balabatim who daven Orthodox shuls, who don't daven three times a day, not all about Sabbath Balabatim. Well, when I was growing up, my father would tell me about situations where Orthodox leadership didn't keep talking to Mishpah. All sorts of things. I mean, you know, you can't judge. I mean, it's always one organization tries to point the finger at the other organization by giving as a proof the worst examples, right? How you Orthodox do such a thing where kach v'kach, you know what I mean? And every Jewish group does that type of argumentation. In the leadership of the conservative movement, when they were discussing the question of women becoming rabbis, there were a whole variety of issues. One of the issues was, how can women be, what are we going to do about the problem of women serving as rabbis when, if they're not chayim, they can't be motzi? Now, some conservative rabbis said, all right, so we decided, because for the same reasons that women could be rabbis, all these social considerations, despite certain halakhic problems, we will now declare that women are now rabbis can do it. You know, and true, halakha until now said no, but we will decide otherwise. That's our prerogative as conservative rabbis. There was, however, a gentleman by the name of Joel Roth. Joel Roth is one of the very bright members of the conservative cabinet. He's very, very knowledgeable. And he said, wait, we got a solution here. What does that reivut mean? A reivut means that one person who's obligated can be motzi somebody else who's obligated, right? Well, these women, all women who become rabbis will now say, I'm obligated. I will make myself obligated, right? And I will do it, as I will take it upon myself, and now I'm obligated, and now I should be able to be motzi everybody else. That was the argument. There was an article written by Gideon Rothstein in response to this, to Joel Roth. It's called The Roth Response Among Ordination of Women. It was published in Tradition, the fall 1988. Now, Gideon Rothstein goes through analysis of the whole Joel Roth responsa. Actually, much of what he said was actually said a generation before by Shlomo Kluger. And the response of Shmuel Chaim, it's surprising he doesn't quote it at all. But the argument is very simple. It's not enough to be obligated. The question is, why? Women who are obligated, yes, they're obligated, but they're obligated midin neder. It's because they took upon themselves an oath. And the fact of the matter is that any time they want to, they can abrogate. They just go to a Jewish court and say, stop, I want to stop. I didn't think about it, I didn't realize. But they can stop that obligation at any time. A revut comes from the obligation, inherent obligation to this particular mitzvah. In this particular mitzvah, as a woman, I'm not obligated. What am I obligated? I'm obligated to keep my oath. My oath said I would sit in sukkah. I'm not obligated in sukkah. I don't become any more obligated in sukkah because I took an oath. I become obligated, why am I obligated? I'm obligated to keep my oath. My oath said I would do A, B, C, D. That's what I'm obligated, not obligated in sukkah. Nasav initial, this kind of a revut stems from the inherent obligation in this mitzvah. That's the obligation. It comes from my nasa v'nishma obligation. When I said, yes, God, I will accept this mitzvah, I said in the plural. But if I'm not, then I didn't say it. There's no obligation. There's no arevut. That was Gideon Rothstein's proof, and then Shlomo Kluger says the same thing. And he discusses a whole bunch of other analysis and proof texts that show that that analysis is correct. But there's a very simple proof. Two people are obligated in some way. One biblically and one rabbinically. Can the person who's rabbinically obligated fulfill the obligation of somebody who's biblically obligated? No! Why not? After all, he's obligated. Clearly, being rabbinically obligated should be no worse than taking an oath. I mean, here the rabbis obligated. It's not that I accept the authority of myself. The rabbis put it upon me. And they have biblical power to do such things. Lo tasur yaminu smol mikol asher erucha. Chazal have been given biblical authority to obligate me. And that's what they did. And yet, despite the fact that I'm rabbinically obligated, I can't go ahead and be motzi somebody who's biblically obligated. So the source of the obligation is as equally important to the fact that I'm obligated. It was a very clever move on Joel's side. And very often when you discuss these type of issues with conservative, right-wing conservative women who are very sensitive to halakhic issues, they will quote Joel Roth.
Who gave that argument? Not Roth, the other guy.
Oh, Shlomo Kluger.
And it's so similar.
No, but Roth, he meant it all. I'm saying Rothin surprisingly reconstructs, has all the same arguments. But Shlomo Kluger was talking about the whole, deals with the question of, he doesn't deal with women. Shlomo Kluger in the 1800s did deal with the question of women, but he did deal with the question of what's the source of the obligation. He goes through all this, somebody goes through all the same argument, and they can't, they can't, he says the same, very similar analysis.
But it's pashut. I mean, the answer to Joel Roth is pashut, so why is it so, why is Joel Roth so,
let me put it this way.
Why
am I mitpael? Let me see. Why is it pashut? So I told you the answer.
No, I knew.
You put it right away. Right? Okay. Look, listen. No. I mean, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, the Rav's father, would say, the difference between me and my son, that when you ask me a good question, I give you a very good answer. But when you ask my son the question, he'll prove to you that the question didn't start. Now, what that question didn't start.
What did you tell me? What does that mean? The
answer is
so obvious.
No, that the distinction is so obvious that it undermines the very basis of the question itself. The point is that the level of such a fundamental answer. So the fundamental distinction of the question didn't begin in the first place. Once you see the answer, the distinction is so clear that the question never started. Now, Joel Roth was taken up in the concept that obligation, if you're obligated, you give me notes to somebody else. That's how the Lacha phrases it. The Gemara in Russian says anybody who's mechuyan and mitzvah can be notes to somebody else. That's the language of the halacha. That's where Joel Roth begins. But Joel Roth doesn't understand the basis of it. Now, Joel Roth did respond, but his answers are not convincing. And I think it's a very fundamental answer that it may be obvious, but I think it's important. It's an important concept. All right. As far as women and talis and women and children, I decided that I will delay this after I finish davening. The davening will take us for a while, because we have to talk about Shachris, and we have to talk about Musaf, and we have to talk about Minyan, and we have to talk about women's prayer groups, and at some point we'll get to back to talis and tefillin. So when we talk about davening, what we're actually talking about is a framework which includes within it three separate obligations. First obligation is the biblical obligation to say Shema, as is written, "Reshach b'cha uvkumecha," that you have to say Kriya Shema, morning and evening. The question is, how much is biblical? Is a very good question. Okay, we paskin that the only thing that is biblical is Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. That's what's biblical. And the rest is rabbinic. The rest of the text is descriptive of the obligation, of how to say the obligation, but the obligation is the declaration Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Chazal came along and extended it to the whole parsha, then said, say, V'hayom Shemoah. By the way, Vayam Shemoah, it also says B'shach B'chal Kumecha, but that's not about learning Torah. It's not talking about this particular verse. And then there's Nikkei. Now, I'm giving you what the consensus opinion, the Rambam holds, the Kriya Shema, the whole three parsha of the Bilaita. But the consensus opinion is Paskin and Halacha is that only the first verse is actually biblical. There's a second biblical obligation, which is to remember the redemption of Egypt morning and night. Say every Seder, Lamatisko, Yom Setcha, Meretz Mitzrayim, Ko Yemechayecha Hayamim, Ko Yemecha Halilot. We will have to discuss whether this is one obligation, two parts, or two separate obligations. What's the difference? It's one obligation with two parts to it. It's not a mitzvah possession, it's two parts. If it's two separate obligations, which have two different phases, one has a day phase, one has a night phase, it might be a very interesting analysis. We'll come back to it. But if you didn't catch it, don't worry, I'll drum it into you. Okay? It's very cute analysis, and we have to talk about this. I mean, the question, and also, even if you say it's two separate mitzvahs, the question is, it's a mitzvah that, you know, goes 12 hours, and it goes another 12 hours, it goes another. A mitzvah that repeats itself every 12 hours. Is it a mitzvah that's repeating itself every 12 hours? Or is it a mitzvah, you know, there's a day mitzvah, and that means it's on 12, off 12. And then the night mitzvah comes on 12 and it's off 12. Okay? Like very, a lot of very cute stuff. Okay,
is there a time element for Kriyat Shema?
Yes. Kriyat Shema is said, as we said, in the first 3 hours of the day, right? And at night, all night time. Shachtucha means it's when you sleep. Kumecha means when you get up. Getting up is the first thing. It doesn't say, okay, Kumecha when you get up. Shachtucha when you sleep, which is the all night period. Kumecha when you get up, which is the first 3 hours of the day. So that is the mitzvah that says Shazman Grandma, it's clear. All is clear. Now, there's an obligation, there's the case, we have the first obligation is Shema, the second obligation is the Mantisko Yom Seitcha Meretz Mitzrayim, to remember the redemption from Egypt, and day and night, and the third obligation is an obligation to pray, which may be biblical or may be rabbinic. I said to pray. Now, that's a very good question. What do I mean to pray? Right now, I'm just saying, turn your head, eyes heavenward, and say something to the Lord. Right? And we're not talking about a specific format, we're not talking about a specific time, an obligation to pray. Let's now take out your books and look at page 100. Okay, we're now at Sifrei. The Sifrei is what's called Medrash Halacha, probably stemming from the time of the Mishnah, it's written in Hebrew. Okay? On the verse, La'ava et Hashem Elokechem ulavdo b'chol levavchem. To love your Lord and serve Him with all your heart. There was a first halacha, now this is a second halacha, he doesn't give you the whole quote. What is avdo, to serve God? Zot fila, that's prayer. Oh, ina el avdo, maybe it means service. What does service mean? Sacrifice, temple worship. Tamar lomar, be'ul avdo, bechol levavchem. To serve God with your whole heart. Is the temple service with your heart? Yeah. So what does the Torah mean when it says avdo b'chol levavchem? Zot tefila, it's worship of the heart, service of the heart. Kshem sh'avodat mizbeach kuya avodah, just as the temple worship of the altar is considered service. So prayer is considered service. Okay? Now, let me point out that this whole proof is based on what? Is there service? I mean, these verses, is there a service of the temple with your heart? That was the whole question. What was the question? What forces the Sifri to learn the Lavdo to mean that it's referring to prayer? Can you serve with all your heart? Right? How do you serve with your heart? How do you temple worship with your heart? Yeah, very simple. When I do a carbon, I do a tremendous kavuna. You understand? I don't have. That is, the answer, it's almost as if the Sifri is pushing towards an end. I can't really answer the Sifri's question. What do you mean? I'll try to get it. Because I see some of you have gotten, some of you don't, and so it's bothering me. The Sifri says, how do I know the avdo b'chol levavchem means prayer? How can I do temple service with my heart? How do you temple service with your heart? You do temple service with your body, right? But my money, what do I do temple service with my heart? So I answer you, so therefore it must be prayer. That's what the Sifri says. I don't understand. Why can't you do temple service with your heart? When I bring the carbon, I do with my whole heart. I do it with meaning, I do it with passion, I do it with devotion. That's what the Torah means. Lavdo b'chol levavchem. Okay? The Sifri is not simple. Because the proof text doesn't really prove necessarily. I don't say that there isn't a question, but I think there's an alternate answer which may be better. So how do you prove? It is, when I want to prove something to you, okay, and this happens in the Talmud all the time, I bring you a proof, and you say, it doesn't prove it because I could have argued this way. Well, here the Mishnah, the Sifri wants to prove something, and I can argue this way. It doesn't prove anything. It's not a proof. You may be right, but it doesn't prove it. Anyway, it's clear from this, but in any case, just irrespective of what Arya Frum, which you see Arya Frum is not representing Arya Frum, somebody else. But just from, it's irrespective of what Arya Frum thinks, that seems to be the shot, the Sifri thinks that, well, Dobo Chalavachan is prayer, and the Sifri seems to be implying that prayer is biblical. And the source text is, alright, now let's take a Rambam, Maimonides, and his code of Jewish, and his code. Everybody has a text, okay? Let's see what the Rambam says. It's a very fascinating one. One of the beauties of the Rambam is not only his beautiful Hebrew style. He wrote in a very simple Hebrew style, but he wrote for the masses. And every word is counted, and every word is measured. And we know, because we now have manuscripts, where we can see how the Rambam was... We now have, in the Cairo Geniza, they found in the manuscript, the Rambam changed words, and you can see by using a particular word, changed the halacha. He was very careful of how he said that. Okay, mitzvah asay litpanel duchol yom shenema v'avaretem et Hashem Elokechem. Serve your Lord. Okay, now there's a little problem, because the Rambam wanted to say to serve Hashem is, right, he should have used the verse of avdo b'chol levavchem. Why does he say v'avaretem et Hashem Elokechem? Why does he use a different verse? The post can talk about this, I don't want to go into it. But it's a similar side of sort of verse, serving God, right? From tradition we know, Shavoda Zo Tfila Shenema Ulavdo V'chol Levavchem. Okay? Now, essentially what the Rambam said is the obligation to serve God comes what? From the verse, V'avaditem Et Hashem Elokechem. Serve God. That's a commandment. How do we know that Avoda can mean prayer? Learn it from a different verse, which is not so clearly a clear obligation. That verse is an obligation. And you will serve God with all your heart. That doesn't say you have to serve God with all your heart. Right? It says, that you will do it, but that's not a commandment. So that's so the Rambam is looking for a verse, one verse that is from the verse, and he knows that avodah can mean worship, prayer. And from the, how do I know it's an obligation? So then he learned from the Vaditim and the Shem of Okay. That's why the Rambam uses two particular verses. Okay, let's start from the beginning. Mitzvah say that Pala Bukhoyom Shinema, Vaditim and Shem of Okay, you shall serve God. And how do we pay Hashem while I'm doing from tradition we know? Shavoda Zohit Vila, that this service is prayer. Shinema, Lavdo Bukhol of Achem. Amru Chachamim, Chacham say, Ezohi, Avoda Shavalev, Zoh, Vila, this is prayer. So Rambam takes prayer as biblical. Where? Rambam takes the Sifri literally. Ve'en minyan ha'tfilot min ha'Torah. Number of tfilot is not biblical. Ve'en mishneh ha'tfilot hazo min ha'Torah. And the text, what you should say, is not biblical either. Ve'en ha'tfilot zman kavua min ha'Torah. Nor is there a specific time biblically. Anybody that spirit moves you, you get up and pray. Ulaficha. And therefore, noshim vavodim chayavim betfila. Therefore, women are obligated in prayer. The fishim mitzvah does say, shalo hazman grama. Because it's a positive mammal, which is not time determined. Ela chiyav mitzvah zu kachi. The obligation of the, by the way, this verse of Kapach points out, he has a different, that in some older editions, the halacha didn't end, you see where it says bet. You notice the bet is a lafikha, that bet should be after the word grumma at the end of that line. That is, Ulaficha is part of the halacha aleph. Ulaficha, because it's not a pasuk man to and therefore women are obligated. The halacha bet begins from ela. Okay, that's elachiyam mitzvah zu kachu. The obligation of this mitzvah is as follows: she adam mitchanin umitpalel v'chol yo. Wait a second.
If it's
every day.
Feel like it, you can do it once in your life in New York City.
That's an excellent question, Schwartzbaum. You are right. The Rambam just said to me that there is no obligation to pray and pray as a mitzvah moves me. And all of a sudden, the Rambam comes along and says, once a day. Better pray every day. Okay. The Kess of Mishnah, we'll see the Kess of Mishnah, we'll do it next week, and I'll get it. But this week, the Kess of Mishnah says, it can't be that there's a mitzvah, I do it once in my lifetime. Right?
What?
No. Because mitzvah, because Brit Milah, according to many, many theories, the mitzvah is to be circumcised. And there's a big discussion according to somebody who's born circumcised, whether there's an obligation. We actually pass it. There are two mitzvahs. There's a mitzvah to circumcise and be circumcised. However, it's not so true. Okay, that was a good try.
Basis for that the mitzvah can't be something you do once. There must be pidyon haben. I mean, there are mitzvahs that you told that you do only once. So
no, pidyon haben I can do five, six times. Oh, but if
that's
you
the obligation
right.
Of
five? No. You're right. Okay. You're right. However, the Rambam says prayer, which is confrontation with my maker, doesn't make sense. It should be one time. The whole purpose of prayer is to reach out to God. It doesn't make sense. Okay, so he says that. It doesn't make sense. God would command me to pray, but you don't have to pray once in your life. I mean, either if the infinite cares about the finite and he wants communication, if God says, "Speak to me." Then he wants, that doesn't make sense, once in my lifetime.
Okay. It could be that once a person admits attests to the presence of God and the existence of God, that could be the sufficient application of possible.
Right.
For once a week.
I didn't say it's not possible. I say that the cast of Mishnah says it's not likely. That's why the Rambam. Okay? And I think about it, you're right. No proof, it's simple svara. Rambam, that's what the cast of Mishnah. No proof, simple svara. That this is one of the Rambans going to attack the Rambam, we'll see. Okay. Elachim mitzuzu kachu. She adam mitchaneinu mitpalel b'chol yom. He should reach out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu every day. Umagid shivcho shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He should say the praise, the shavach of God. V'achar kach shorel tzvachav, shud tzavich. And then he should ask for his request. Right? Shu tzarech lehem bevakasha ubetfina, with request and with petitioning. Va'achar kach noten shevach v'odoy al Hashem ala tova shishpia lo kol echad lefi kocha. Then the third thing you should go ahead and do is what? Is give praise to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for all that you've done. That is essentially going to the Rambam, you should say, great God, help me. Thanks for it. That's essentially what you have to say biblically. And everybody does it the way he can do it. You know, when you speak even better, and you speak, you know how to pour your heart better, you can lengthen it. Gimel. Im haya ragil marbe. Okay, again, the second, where does the Rambam get this? Okay, then I'm going to repeat again. Shevach, praise. Bakasha, request, ogoya. Shevach, praise. Bakasha, request, ogoya. Thanks. These are the three elements of the Rambam seems to apply. Has to do with that order. Where did the Rambam get it? That's a good point. I haven't checked Chana. But I don't think that's where the Rambam. I don't think it's that she gives. Maybe because there's a. I don't know if she starts off a Sheva. I'll look. It's a good point. I think one of the sources that the Rambam knows it because we look at the Shmona Esrei. The Shmona Esrei itself, you look, the first three brachot, Hakel HaKadosh, those are Shevach. Then come the middle brachot, which is Bakasha, And the last bracha is modim anachnu lach, right? So the Rambam seems the so chazal the David shemach bakashadoya. So the Rambam said that must be the obligation. The chazal were merely fleshing out the biblical obligation, so that must be the obligation. But again, you can argue, maybe the chazal and their insight chose that format. What do you see? The Rambam claims the continue. And by the way, there are other Rishonim who agree with the Rambam that you have to pray every day, but don't mention Shabbat Bakashadoya. They don't mention that obligation. It's very unique to the Rambam. Not unique, but the Rambam is one of the first to talk about this. Im haya ragil, marbe betchina bakasha. If, you know, he's very good at this, his youth feels comfortable doing it, he says a lot of bakashot. Im haya ragil svatayim, but if he was a stumbler, he doesn't not so fluid. Medaber kifi yachalto, b'chol yitzhiyot tzayim, he does it because he does it according to his ability anytime he wants to. V'chein minyan ha-tfilot. Collect kifi yachalto. How many times you daven it? And many times you want to. You can daven once, you saw that before. You can daven any times you want to. Yesh mispal al pam l'chakayim. You gotta sell those who pray once a day. Yeah, the Rambam repeats again that you gotta daven once a day. V'yesh mispal al pam im harbay. Many times. V'akol yu mispal al nochach ha-mikdash. Everybody has to pray facing towards the Beit HaMikdash. B'chol makom sh'yeh from wherever he is. V'chele adaber tamid mimosha ha-bein ha-badez. That was the norm situation until the time of Ezra. It was no formal prayer until Ezra. What happened to Ezra? Kivin shegalu Yisrael b'yimei Nebuchadnezzar Russia. When the Jews went into exile, nit'arvu b'paras v'yavon, they got mixed up with the Persians and the Greeks. V'shar omot v'nodu lehem banim b'atzod ha'goyim, and then they were born in the land of the non-Jews. V'otar ha'banim nitbalbulu svatam, and those people, those kids, didn't know how to speak Hebrew. They got confused. He says the language got confused. By the way, this is very interesting. You know, the whole idea of Ladino or Yiddish is that you don't speak, the Jews never spoke the Goyim's language. Most of them, they always spoke sort of a bilbul safa, a mixture, they don't make the Rambam's language. You know, they never spoke, that's pshat lo shinu l'shonam, means they continue speaking, but sure, they speak a little German, and they do this, and they do that, and the Rambam says the same thing happened. And because they weren't fluent in Hebrew, she couldn't speak in one clear language, except, you know, b'shibush. They didn't know how to speak properly, and besides, they didn't all speak the same language. Because when he davened, he couldn't express himself properly in one language. L'shon chapetzav, or l'agid shemach HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'l'shon kodesh. He couldn't speak in Hebrew. Ashid avu imo l'shon adachel. He had to mix in some other language. Now, the halacha is that you can daven in other languages. The Rambam is not denying that. But the language in which God communicated to Jews was in Hebrew. Jews wanted to reciprocate by praying in Hebrew too. Now, it doesn't mean that you couldn't pray in other languages. The uniqueness about languages like Ladino and Yiddish is because the Jews thought it was Jewish. It was a Jewish language, and therefore they poured it out in Yiddish. They didn't daven in German. That's a very modern. And when the Jews davened, they davened in something that was Jewish. Okay. But anyways, they wanted to daven in Hebrew, they couldn't daven in Hebrew either. The Chiman Shara Ezra Beidina. Kach, when Ezra saw this, Amdu v'tiknu lam shmona esrei brachot al haseder. They established 18 brachot, that he said, shalosh v'shonot shevach l'shem, shalosh achonot hodaya, v'emtzayot yesh v'em shelat, kol dvarim shehem. She said, kol dvarim shehem, kamo avot l'chol chavtze ish v'ish l'tzorchei hatzibur kulam. He says, these middle, there's three in the beginning, three in the end, and 12 in the middle. These are 12 categories of prayers. These are called avot. These are major, avot melachot. Avot doesn't mean fathers, it means major categories of prayer, which include personal obligations, right? Slach lanu, v'fa'enu, right? And more communal obligations, like hashiva shofteinu, l'rishonah, על הצדיקים, right? כדי שיהיו ארוחות בכל, בפי כל, וילמדו אותן, so that, so why they do this? So there would be a prayer that could be set up for everybody. וילמדו אותן, they could teach it. ותהיה תפילות אלו האילגים, תפילה שלהם, so even those who could not speak well, the ileg, who doesn't speak too well. תפילה שלמה כתפילה בעלי הלשון והצחה. That a person who wasn't good, didn't know how to read so, speak so beautifully, could say a text that was just as beautiful as the person who was, could speak beautifully. ובני עניין זה תקנו כל הברכות והתפילות מסודרות. And for this reason, Ezra set up, formulated a prayer text and brachot. By the way, before Ezra, there were no brachot either. And there were a lot of loose, there were a lot of loose formulations, but now that we had, Ezra was big into education. He reinstituted education in the Jewish community. And we know that they were at the time of Ezra, they didn't even know they were, it was forbidden to intermarry. Yeah, that's how far. They didn't even know it was forbidden to intermarry. Anyway.
Was it?
תקנו כל הברכות והתפילות מסודרות לפי כל ישראל כדי שעניין כל ברכה ארוך בפי האלה. So everybody had a text to pray. And forgive me, let's continue to finish it a little bit more. וכן תקנו שיהיה מניין התפילות כמין הקבלות. They also set up that the number of תפילות should be like the number of the daily sacrifices. שתי תפילות בכל יום כנגד שני תמידים. There should be two regular prayers against the tamid shel boker and shamid shel b'leil at shachrit and mincha. The chol yom sheish. By the way, and the third ma'ariv, of course, is because there were pieces that were left over. They burnt at night. Okay, but okay. The chol yom sheish korban musaf tiknu bo tefila shlishit kineged korban musaf. When there was a musaf service, they also could set up an extra prayer for the musaf. ותפילה שהיא כנגד תמיד של בוקר, היא נגד תפילת השחר. And the morning prayer, which is against the tamid of the morning, is called תפילת השחר. תפילה שכנגד תמיד של בן הבאים, היא נקראת תפילת מנחה. ותפילה שכנגד המוספים, היא נקראת תפילת המוספים, or we call תפילת מוסף. וכן התקינו שיהיה אדם מתפלל תפילה אחת בלילה, שהרי איברי תמיד של בן הבאים מתעכלים והולכים כל הלילה, because the pieces that were left over, they didn't burn during the day, they burnt all the night, so that there was an eshtukad on his bech, there was a fire burning all the time, and they kept the fire going. V'hochim shenemar, hi ha'ola amogda, they burnt all night, ki'inyan shenemar, erev avokim v'tzarayim, and he says, this also, these three prayers a day, morning, noon, and night, not only are they in opposition to the korbanot, but they're also in consonance with that which it says in Tehillim, Shem Erev Avokev V'Tzarayim Asicha Ve'emeh V'Yishma Koli. That David HaMelech talks about praying at night, during the morning, and during the day. So it seems to be a very old tradition of two times a day. Ve'ein Tefilat Arvit Chova. And the Tefilat Arvit, now here means what? The Shmona Esre. Okay? Well, I'll come back to distinctions on that, but right now let's get to the Shmona Esre is not ain't filat chova ketvilat shachrit u'mincha. It's not as obligatory as shachrit u'mincha. V'afar piken nagu kol Yisrael v'chol makamot moshvotayim l'tpel arvit. Look at language. V'kiblu aleihem ketvilat chova. This is a neder. Klal Yisrael took upon themselves a neder to pray three times a day. Notice the language of the Rambam. Just read. Call Yisrael. Okay? Next, when I ask you next week, were women obligated to daven three times a day? Just remember this language of the Rambam. We'll talk about the Rambam when I finish it. Just a little bit more. Just a few moments. I don't know if I would finish it. Just remember this language of the Rambam because it's not trivial. The Rambam wants to exclude women. He knows how to exclude women. He says, call Yisrael, all of Israel. Seems to imply something. V'chein tiknu tefila achar. On the fast days, there was an extra prayer that came right after Mincha. Only on the fast days, so it would be additional request of Netanyot. We only do it when on Yom Kippur. But in the time of the Chazal, we're not infested in Adam Eve. Kama nin alusha v'shamayim bar ha-shemesh v'nistara v'fi she'en v'palanota el ha-somach v'shkimat ha-kachama. Nimtzu, that's the halacha we learned. Nimtzu, ha-tfilot b'chol yom shalosh, arvit, shachrit, u'mincha. Right? Mariv, shachrit, and mincha. By the way, just remember the Rambam here gives the order. It doesn't say shachrit mincha mariv, but arvit, shachrit, mincha.
The order of the day.
Yes. Right. But you'd say, wasn't it obvious? No, it's not obvious. Because karbonot is shachrit mincha marit. So the Rambam says arvit shachrit mincha, and that may have a halachic consequence. It's not trivial. The Rambam is very clear. Right? U'v'shabbatot u'moadim u'v'shabbashim arba, and there's a musaf that's now four. Shalosh shel kol yom u'tfilat ha-musafim u'tfilat ha-musafim u'v'yom there's a period, there's a mistake, the period should be the word before the word of v'yom. We have to keep it with chamesh because there's ne'ila ha-ve'elu u'tfilat ne'ila. Okay, that's essentially the Rambam. I think what we'll do is, I think that's enough for the time being. I'd just like to point out to you appreciate if you did was today when did you leave? Give me back the Rambams. I'll give them back to you and then give you people. Because the Rambam is going to read the comments of the Rambam and the Kesedishon side. The Rambam essentially suggests, okay, that everyone, men, women, they are obligated in prayer. But then the question is, notice the Rambam says. But the women are obligated because there's a positive map which is not then determined. The fundamental question will be, when the rabbis came along and they set up a format, shachrit, mincha, marit, which is clearly has elements of mitzvah taseh shazman grama, are women now obligated? Are now women obligated? Because one could argue what? Well, they were obligated, so the rabbis now said, you're obligated the whole thing. The other side could be, well, yes, they're obligated, but when the rabbis put in this mitzvah seish hazman grama part to it, they did not obligate them in that part. They kept this mitzvah seish hazman grama part, sets of times, right? That the woman got out. We'll talk about that right next week. Bye.